Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 64 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what is going on?
Yeah, I'm feeling good.
Me too, man.
Yeah, it's like a Rocky Mountain high, man. Just up there in the cloud. That good.
Dude, that's you every day.
It's good, man. Just good.
You actually sound high. I know you're not. I'm hoping it's just a Rocky Mountain.
If I was actually in the Rocky Mountain, in the Colorado, man, I think you can you can partake.
I think you'd fit right in.
Fit in?
In the old town of Denver. Or the state of Colorado.
Colorado.
Hey, folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime, and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. I don't know, Gibbs. I'm really excited about this episode. This is a subject that I've been waiting to do this guy since we started this podcast.
Let's not tell him who we're going to do yet.
No, we'll hold it back.
Yeah.
Let's do Patreon first.
Let's do Patreon.
All right. So we had a lot of new support. Awesome. We had Gina Villarreal.
Yes.
Michaela Mays. Caroline Louise G.
If you say so.
If I say it, it must be true. Ella Russell.
Yeah.
Beverly Salmon. Diana Mattson. Singa Robertson Alberton.
That's a mouthful.
It is. It's long. That's a lot to write, too.
Yeah.
With the hyphenated part.
She's a good social media. I don't know what I was going to say after that.
All right.
Good social media.
We are, what, just 2 minutes into this episode?
Yeah. 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 She's, again, you better just keep going.
All right. We had Lisa Stobart. Oh, my gosh. Danielle Sampson Lemke.
Yeah. Lemke.
And got to be related. That's the second Lemke.
Got a lot of Lemkes out there, too.
I think we got some Lemkes.
We got two.
We're on the way to getting the whole Lemke family involved.
That'd be cool if we had like a whole family, you know?
TCAT family.
TCAT
family. We do have the TCAT family. And then you remember we had N-Friender the other day. And this week we have No-Friender Thrash Metal Show. I don't know if that's another podcast or
just a heavy metal band, maybe?
I don't know. Check it out. I mean, obviously, thrash metal is not my favorite.
Not anymore. I had to let it go.
I had to. It's causing a lot of neck pain from the head whippage.
Yeah. Well, it definitely messed your forehead up.
Where all the hair went.
Yeah.
We had Jen Crenshaw.
I like that name.
Robin H.
Just H. What up, H?
Make up any last name you want that starts with H.
Hulu.
I knew you were talking about Hulu and messed it up. You got whatever flicks is up next.
That's right.
We had Annie.
Just Annie. Annie, you going to be okay?
She's okay because she's pledging. She's supporting us.
Was that Michael Jackson?
Annie, are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Annie got your gun. Was that a different song?
It's definitely not the...
That's Annie Oakley.
Yeah, that's definitely not the Michael Jackson song.
Yeah. Huh. Let's keep rolling.
We had Paula Hammond, Christy Marcel.
She's French.
I don't know why. You just love to say what people are and you have no clue.
I don't.
Cracks me up. Lindsay Greer and Katie Burgee.
Katie Burgee?
Yep.
KB?
So... Mm-hmm. And Katie came out at her highest level.
Awesome.
So big thanks to everybody.
Really appreciate it.
And I forgot, Gibbs, No Friend or Thrash Metal Show came out at her highest level, too. I didn't mention
that. That's cool. I really appreciate very the support. Cool. Yeah.
And if we go back into the vault, this week we selected Selena Ginger, been a longtime supporter, so I wanted to give a very special shout out to Selena.
Appreciate that, Selena.
It's just amazing. The new support, the people that stay with us month after month, it allows us to keep doing the show, and we love it.
Hanging in there with us.
Yep, amazing. And then on PayPal, we had a lot of support there as well. We had Cynthia Kelly, Richard Williams, Gayla Kyle, Jamie Laredo, and Laura Schaller.
That's a lot of people.
It is. Awesome.
Really appreciate that.
Big shout out to everybody. And then all of our social media fans, we love you guys too, and don't want to leave you out either.
Well, I do. Yeah, we appreciate all of you, and we appreciate the admins and the moderators we have on all the group pages and stuff, trying to keep everything moving along for us. So thank you.
Big shout out to Maggie for the writing and research. Maggie's back. Maggie goes down with an illness last week.
Yeah, feeling better now.
So feeling better now, back to writing and researching.
Miss you, Maggie.
And then after you listen to this episode, make sure you jump over, check out True Crime All Time Unsolved. We have an episode out right now on Michael Tardio and Christopher Monson.
Yeah.
Two murders, two victims, and a lot of layers to this case, Gibbs. I mean,
it really does.
International intrigue.
Yeah.
Ponzi schemes, Playboy, Playmates.
Jewelry.
Heists. There's a lot going on with this case. Yeah. It's a very good one. And Gibbs, the merchandise is doing well. A lot of people, buying stuff, starting to show it off on social media.
Yeah, get that fleece or get those jogging pants, or like Mike's wearing his Dickie.
Yeah, the fleece and the workout pants, those are the two biggest sellers right now. People really, really liking that. And then I want to talk about CrimeCon just a second. So Gibbs and I are definitely going to CrimeCon. We should be getting very soon a special code to give to everybody. So if you haven't signed up and you're going to, wait just a few more days. We'll have the code and we'll send it out on social media. And we'll definitely announce it on the next episode. All right, Gibbs, you ready to get into this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm excited, man.
You have now entered a very rare group of people in this country. You're in the ranks of Charlie Manson, Ted Bundy. You claim you didn't commit these murders, but you're right in there now as far as everybody else is concerned.
Serial killers do on a small scale what governments do on a large one. They are a product of the times, and these are bloodthirsty times. Even psychopaths have emotions if you dig deep enough. But then again, maybe they don't. I'll tell you what, I gave up on love and happiness a long time ago. People in this day and age are brainwashed and programmed like a computer at being nothing more than puppets. This nation, this country is founded in violence. Violent delights tend to have violent ends. It's madness is something rare in individuals, but in groups, people, in ages, it is a rule. Killing is killing, whether done for duty, profit, or fun. Men murdered themselves into this democracy.
That is Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. I listened to that a number of times, Gibbs. I don't know what in the hell he's talking about.
I don't know if he knows what he's talking about.
It was just a rambling mess of like cryptic statements.
Yeah, I kind of think he was trying to say we're all a bunch of Stepford people living in a Stepford town. Am I saying it?
You said Stepford, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's a P in there somewhere. Stepford.
Yeah. Anyway, he's trying to say we're all robotic and we just follow this and that. But he's wrong.
I don't know what he was saying. I don't know. But he's a fascinating case. And like I said, I wanted to do this one from the very get-go. And he's a big timer. There's no doubt about it. The notoriety that came along with his murders, his capture, all of that. The guy said it in the clip, Manson, Bundy. He's comparing Richard Ramirez to these infamous killers. So as we always do, we've got to start out with Richard's early life. He was born on February 28th, 1960, to Julianne and Mercedes Ramirez. Now, he was born Ricardo Leyva Munoz Ramirez. That's a mouthful right there, Gibbs.
I'm surprised you got it out.
I barely did.
I was going to jump in and help you.
I saw you chomping at the bit to jump in. His father was born in Camargo, Mexico, and his mother was born in Colorado.
Rocky Mountain High.
There you go.
There you go, yeah.
Not back then.
No.
And his parents, they met when they were both 14 years old. And Mercedes, her family would end up moving to Juarez, Mexico. And Julian would follow them so that the two could get married. You ever been to Juarez, Mexico?
Not the Juarez.
Scariest time I've ever had in my life.
You were there?
I was there. I was with my dad and my stepmom on vacation.
Yeah.
I was probably 10 or 12 years old. I was scared to death.
I would have been. Not really.
Not you.
But if I was you, I would have been.
If you were me, you would have been scared. You know, not putting down Juarez, but man, it seemed like a scary place to me as a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
12-year-old. So they did marry in 1948. They were only 19 years old. And Richard is going to be one of five children. He's the youngest. So he has siblings, Reuben, Joseph, Robert, and then a sister named Ruth.
Really like those R names, didn't they?
They were into the R's. Now, his dad, Julian, was not a legal citizen of the United States. So he lived in Juarez while Richard's mom, Mercedes, lived in El Paso. And all the children were born on the U.S. side of the border so that they could become legal citizens. But Julian would make it to the United States, and he became a legal citizen and ended up getting a job on the Santa Fe Railroad in 1952. Mercedes was working at a boot factory, and she was actually working at this factory while she was pregnant with Richard. There are stories, Gibbs, about the harsh chemicals used to make these boots and the fact that she was inhaling all of these very harsh, toxic chemicals.
Yeah, I'm guessing when they take the skin, you know, make the leather, that process, those are really...
Like tanning the hide?
Those are strong chemicals.
Well, and back then, right, didn't have the same labor laws and things that we do today.
No, they probably weren't even wearing gloves.
But she was pregnant, and the harsh chemicals caused her body to try to reject this unborn fetus, Richard. So Richard's life is not even started yet. And already he's having issues. And he's going to have a number of issues that are going to impact his life. Now, it was said that he was a pretty good baby, you know, didn't cry a lot, ate well, slept well. But when he was 2 years old, he almost died because a dresser fell on his head. As a two-year-old.
Wow.
I mean, you talk about dangerous. He didn't die, but he suffered a very bad concussion.
At a young age, head injury.
Yes.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about a couple of head injuries. Now, he was unconscious for probably 15 minutes or more.
By the way, this is a good PSA. This is when you want to tell yourself to go get a few brackets and secure that dresser. So when your kid tries to climb up it, it doesn't fall on top of them. Or any hutch. Yeah.
All right. Good PSA from Gibbs.
I don't know. Just putting it out there.
So knocked out, maybe unconscious, 15 minutes. This wound required about 30 stitches to sew up.
That's a big wound.
Yeah. I mean, it was a dresser. Fell on his head.
Man.
That's a serious, serious injury. Now, when he was 5 years old, he was hit in the head with a swing and knocked out. So by the age of five, he's had two head injuries.
Yeah.
Both knocking him unconscious. At the age of six, Richard would witness his father beating his oldest brother, Reuben. And as Richard grew up, you know, a lot of the things that you read about him were that, you know, he was an outcast. He didn't have a lot of friends. And by the fifth grade, Richard would be diagnosed with temporal lobe epilepsy. The doctors said, you know, it was a serious condition, but he could potentially grow out of it. You know, some of these early head traumas in all the literature, all the research you read on, violent offenders, violent behavior to come.
Something they all have in common.
It's a lot of them. Yeah. A lot of them have it in common. They certainly do.
One variable that they all have. Did you ever hit your head growing up?
No, I don't remember hitting my head.
I did.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you were dropped several times on your head as a baby. Maybe. By accident or on purpose.
One of them. Yeah, depending on
who you ask.
Who you ask.
And look how you turned out.
I know.
So you got that going for
happy.
You. But, you know, being serious about these head injuries.
Right.
You know, there have been a lot of studies. You know, we're not pulling that out of thin air.
Or anywhere else.
Or anywhere else. When you do the research, there have been a lot of studies about childhood brain injuries leading to violent behavior later in life. Now, by the age of 10, Richard Ramirez starts to hang out in cemeteries. He's smoking weed.
Yeah.
And he's trying to hide out from his dad. His dad has big time anger issues. So his refuge was to hang out in the cemetery.
Well, it was probably an easy spot to go. Didn't think anybody would be looking for him there. I don't know. I grew up with some kids that would go to the cemetery, so.
But smoking weed at the age of 10, that seems...
That's the bigger thing right
that's
there.
That's pretty young.
Yeah. Hitting the doobies that early, man.
But he did play football, which is surprising to me, given the pictures, given what Richard Ramirez looks like. You know, he looks like he weighs about 110 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah. He looks fast.
But apparently he was a quarterback. And he didn't weigh 110 pounds soaking wet. At a certain point in his life, I think, you know, maybe 12, 13 years old, I read somewhere where he weighed almost 200 pounds.
Oh, so he was a big boy at one point.
Yeah, he didn't weigh anywhere near that later in life.
So you're saying he shared the same thing I did with Huskies.
I think he was wearing his Husky jeans,
yeah,
sitting in the cemetery, smoking his weed.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing.
Probably rocking out to some Zeppelin.
We call that pulling a Gibby.
Chasing it down with Mad Dog.
Mad Dog 2020.
That's right.
Oh, the good old days. Strawberry Boone's Farm, Boone's Hill, whatever you call it.
Yeah, you probably drank that.
I drank it all, man.
I see you drinking that strawberry pink.
I don't drink it now.
I think you probably do.
I went out, not to get off subject, I went out with my buddies the other day.
Yeah.
And they were drinking some kind of pink wine beer, I guess is all the rage now. It's like a rosé beer or something.
Really?
Yeah, it was very strange. They said it was good.
These are your buddies, huh?
Yeah, these are my buddies.
Okay.
I hope they're listening. So we mentioned that he played football. We know that he had two concussions prior to the age of five or by the age of five. We don't know how many concussions he may have had playing football. They weren't diagnosed back then the way they are now.
No, your coach just dusted you off.
Rubbed some dirt on it.
Said, get back out there,
get
son.
Back out there. So we know that it can cause, we found out over the years, right? We've got a lot of these football players aging after retirement, you know, having serious problems because of, you know, some traumatic brain injuries they suffered from multiple concussions.
Like that tight end that played for New England that said he had a concussion and that, all those concussions is why he ended up killing that guy.
Oh, Hernandez?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that that was part of his defense.
Yeah, yep, that was part of it.
So around the seventh grade, Ramirez apparently just stops caring about everything. His grades are horrible. He starts sniffing glue.
Oh, that's always a take it to the next level.
Oh, my gosh. And you know those inhalants, man, they're bad news. They can cause a host of problems.
Especially back then.
Diminished intelligence, memory loss, you know, all kinds of weird things. And keep in mind, he's about 12 years old, right? So he's smoking weed at 10, sniffing glue at 12. But it's around this time, around the age of 12, that Richard has a cousin by the name of Miguel that comes back from Vietnam, and the two start to spend time together. And this cousin, Miguel, would show Richard Ramirez very disturbing photos that he had taken in Vietnam and brought back with him. And we're talking about photos, Gibbs, that show Vietnamese women that Miguel himself had raped, tortured, and murdered. But it's what happens to Richard Ramirez when he views these photos that is a huge foreshadowing of what's about to come. Because Ramirez is going to later say that he would become sexually aroused by looking at these pictures.
It's a little strange. Well, not a little. It's a lot.
No, it's very strange.
Yeah.
Richard told me that he needed to associate gruesome violence with sex in order to be completely satisfied. He also told me that he had to violently fantasize about his victims before he could go away sexually gratified.
So this is a guy that, you know, interviewed later, but knew Richard Ramirez in his younger days, talking about how, you know, Richard would tell him he was fusing sex and violence together. And basically that's the only way that he could be satisfied.
Get his rocks off.
Yeah. That's the only way. And you just wonder how much of it came from at the age of 12 being shown these horrific pictures and, you know, getting aroused by them, putting the two together.
Well, and then feeding into it is the problem.
Well,
right?
he's going to feed into it. Sure.
Once you cross that bridge, man, you don't, it's hard to come back.
But would he have ever associated the two, sex and violence, together had his cousin not shown him these pictures that nobody should ever see, let alone a 12-year-old kid?
Right. But clearly, you know, his cousin had issues.
He did. He's the one that committed the horrible acts
right.
seen in the pictures.
So maybe he's a little gene in the family.
Well, that could be too. But that's not the only thing Miguel brought back with him from Vietnam that he's going to share with Richard, because he's also going to teach him what he called, you know, war tactics. So we're talking about things he had learned in Vietnam about killing folks, killing people using stealth, staying well hidden, ambushing, you know, whatever you know, all those different things that you might learn in war. He's teaching young Richard Ramirez, and he's going to use these skills. We know he is.
Right.
He's a bad guy.
He's a good student, is what you're saying.
I have a feeling he was a good student, yes. Now, when Richard was only 13 years old, Miguel shot and killed his wife in front of Richard. So the first 13 years, he has, you know, these head injuries. Then he gets in with his cousin Miguel, and he's seeing some serious shit.
At this point, I'm guessing he's pretty desensitized to violence.
He might be at the age of 13.
I mean, you're seeing all that. Eventually, it's just going to be like, that's just what happens, man.
But up to this point, Gibbs, I think, you know, he had seen pictures. He just saw a real person murdered in front of him.
And that would change things.
That's got to be a different level.
Yeah.
Seeing the pictures is bad enough. Seeing it happen for real in front of your eyes, that's something else.
No, it's definitely strange to see somebody die.
Have you seen somebody die?
I've seen two people die.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Like right before your eyes?
Yeah.
Holy shnikes.
So.
It would be. I've never seen that.
Yeah, a stranger and somebody I knew, right? So.
Let me take that back. I've seen people pass away, loved ones.
Well, yeah.
I've never seen someone killed.
All right. So of course, the loved one. And then I saw somebody hit by a car, flew up in the air and died.
Okay. That would be traumatic.
That was traumatic.
But that wasn't a murder, I'm assuming. That was an accident.
Yeah,
Traumatic.
But still traumatic, yeah. And then whatever I do on weekends.
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't talk about that.
Exactly.
But Richard Ramirez would start committing burglaries, petty thefts. Again, at the age of 13, very young, he was skipping school. And basically what he would do is walk around a neighborhood, scoping out homes that he liked, and he would break in, go through people's stuff, and take whatever he wanted. I mean, that's pretty much what he did. And at one point, he went to Los Angeles to visit his brother, Ruben. That was his oldest brother, who just also happened to be a petty criminal and would teach Richard his craft.
Oh, the art of cat burglary?
Yeah. You know, how to break into homes, how to commit burglaries and get away with it. So it's bad enough that Richard has these thoughts going through his head. He has like mentors in murder, mentors in
robbery
and burglary. He's being taught how to do these things. And the other thing that his oldest brother, Reuben, got him into in a big way was porn.
Really? 1970s porn. Yeah. Debbie Does Dallas.
Yeah, but that came out in the 70s, didn't it?
I think probably did that and Deep Throat. Not that I know.
Not that you were first in line at the old drive-in theater. I was only old enough to be there. Just messing with you. We joke about it, but what does that do to a young kid that has already associated sex and violence, and now he is heavily into watching pornography?
Right.
That can't be a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
Because now you're seeing a lot of sex, you know, up on the screen. But eventually Richard would leave LA, go back to El Paso, and enroll in high school. So how funny is that? I mean, he's done all these things before he's even in high school.
Yeah. He's been a busy boy.
But he's not going to make it through. He's going to drop out of high school. You know, he would earn the nickname Ricky the Klepto. They also called him Fingers because of all the thefts. I mean, he was stealing from anybody that he could. And at a very early age, you know, 15, 16 years old, he also started to have sex with sex workers.
Okay. It's a little early.
Everything he does is early. Not saying you should ever do it.
No.
But he's doing stuff at an earlier age than you would ever imagine people doing it at.
Right.
To me, anyway.
And I meant, no, you should never do it.
I had that for you.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that the Ramirez family liked to do is they like to go hunting as a family. So Richard enjoyed that, but he also liked to go hunting alone. And he would talk about this later on, how he enjoyed sneaking up on his prey. He enjoyed the stalking.
The rush
of stalking something.
There's that rush doing that. It's, you know, the anticipation of the surprise.
Yeah, I don't know. You are today speaking a lot about things that seem to be coming from a place of knowledge that is scaring the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But he did. He would talk about this, how much he enjoyed it, and he would try to sneak up on the animals where he could stab them. You know, he's not shooting a deer from, you know, 50 yards away.
Right. He's going caveman style.
He is trying to literally sneak up on an animal, get close enough to where he could stab it. And he would say that once he was able to do it, you know, he would disembowel these animals. And we've talked about this before. Sometimes these people just want to see what the insides of an animal look like.
Yeah. See how everything works.
It's very strange to me. It's almost clinical in a way.
Right.
Richard was also obsessed with horror movies. And then at some point, Gibbs, and this is something I couldn't really wrap my head around, he started to attend some meetings for the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, he got a knock on the door one Sunday?
I don't know. But he started going to these meetings.
Yeah.
And why that is so strange to me is because we know, I mean, Richard Ramirez is infamous for the fact that, you know, he talked about Satan, Satanism, devil worshiping. You know, everybody's seen the iconic picture of him holding up his hand, and he's got like a pentagram drawn on his hand in court. But here he is at one point in his life attending a meeting for the Jehovah's Witnesses.
There are different sects of Satanism. I can tell you a little bit about Satanism. It is undefiled wisdom instead of hypocritical self-deceit. It is power without charity. A Satanist admits to being evil. We are all evil in some form or another, are we not? Evil has always existed. Perfect world most people seek, she'll never come to pass, and it's going to get worse. The great epoch of our life is when we gain the courage to rebaptize our evil qualities as being our best qualities.
So that's Richard Ramirez talking a little bit about Satanism. I understood about 8% of what he was saying there, I think.
Is that about all you got out of that?
Yeah, he lost me pretty quickly into that rant.
Me too.
And he used the word epochs.
Epochs? Define it.
I think it's like period of time.
How does it relate?
Like, to who?
Exactly.
Like your mama?
Oh, I can't believe you went there.
All right, Gibbs, let's take a quick break to talk about our new sponsor, Havenly. So Havenly is the most delightful way to design spaces in your home on any budget. Partner with an interior designer to create a beautiful design based on your unique style and space. And what's amazing about this is you can actually buy whatever you have your heart set on directly through the Havenly platform because there's access to hundreds of retailers and you'll get the guaranteed best prices. So Havenly makes it super easy to design a new space. And we're talking about one room, right? You can do one room if you want. You can do whatever you want, but it's all in one place. So you get access to an interior designer. You see all the different choices of, you know, furniture, accents, all of that. And you can buy it right through the site. They've completed tens of thousands of beautiful designs. Their team of designers will work with you online. They don't have to come to your house to design the living space of your dreams. So guest room, family room, kitchen, whatever you want. And the best part about it, it starts at just $79 per room. Havenly helps you every step of the way. They find out what your budget is. They find out what your style is. And then they help you shape the design you want at a price you can afford. So our listeners can start by taking the free Havenly style quiz. It's a great way to learn your unique design style. And it helps Havenly match you up with the perfect designer to put together the perfect room. So turn your Pinterest board into reality. Try Havenly today by visiting havenly.com/TCAT and you'll get 25% off your design package. That's Havenly, HAVENLY.com/TCAT for 25% off your design package. Havenly.com/TCAT. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. All right, so getting back to Ramirez, he's 15 years old. He gets a job at the Holiday Inn.
The Hotel Motel.
Holiday Inn.
That one. Yeah.
But he gets fired from this job because he tried to enter the room of a woman and sexually assault her.
How old?
15 years old.
15.
But he was stopped because this woman's husband walked in while his wife was being attacked. He beats the shit out of Richard Ramirez.
Good for him.
No, good. It is good. He protected his wife. He kicked the shit out of Ramirez. But the couple was from out of town, and they wanted to get the heck out of Dodge. So no charges were ever filed in this case. They didn't want to stick around, I guess, to do what it would have taken to press charges. At around the same time, his cousin Miguel gets released from the Texas State Mental Hospital. This Miguel, he's a real winner. And they start hanging out together again. But when Richard is 18 years old, he moves to Los Angeles. He's already a heavy drug user. The man's got horrible teeth, and you can see that in a lot of pictures and interviews, because apparently all the guy did was eat candy and drink soda.
Probably never brushed his teeth either.
No, and it was said that he had horrible breath as well.
Yeah, probably had rotted teeth, man.
But he's 18 years old.
Yeah, rotted teeth, rotted teeth.
It is, but, you know, at 18 years old, you got to, that's some pretty serious neglect to have them rotted already.
So if you're a kid listening, make sure you brush your teeth at least twice a day.
And if you're a kid listening, don't listen. You should not be listening to the story of Richard Ramirez.
Let your mom and dad know that they left the podcast running.
Yeah. And he would make his way to San Francisco. He's heavy into Satan worship by this time. And in San Francisco, he actually meets Anton LaVey. And Anton LaVey is kind of a famous guy, infamous, however you want to term it. But, you know, he was an author who wrote a lot about satanic type things. So I want to talk a little bit about Ramirez's arrest record. You know, he got arrested a lot for possession, breaking and entering, auto theft. We already talked about his lack of brushing skills, but apparently Gibbs, the guy smelled. He just didn't take personal hygiene very seriously at all.
Didn't like to wash his stuff that needed to be cleaned every day, huh?
He didn't like to brush his teeth. He didn't wash up. He didn't use deodorant. So he's in California. He's committing all these thefts. By the age of 23, his sister tries to convince him to move back to El Paso. He turns her down, and what he tells her is that he's a thief, and he's going to continue to be a thief, and he has no fear because at this point, he's protected by Satan. And for some reason, the image of Dana Carvey doing Church Lady just
popped in your
head
there?
Into my head.
Yeah.
Every time I say Satan, that's what I think of.
The Church Lady dance?
Could it be Satan? But it would be the very next year when Richard Ramirez would commit his first murder. He's 24 years old. June 28th, 1984, he enters an open window and stabs 79-year-old Jenny Vincow to death while she was asleep. And after he murders this woman, he ends up having sex with her corpse.
Of course he does. That's what they do.
And one thing that we're definitely going to see about Richard Ramirez is he has no type, because when it comes to age range, he is all over the map. I mean, his first victim is 79 years old. Now, the police were able to lift fingerprints from the window screen, but they had nothing to compare it to. The prints don't come back as a hit for Richard Ramirez. They don't have anything to go on, you know, other than these prints that they can't match up. And this, you know, this case is a very tough one to solve. Around this same time, a 6-year-old girl is abducted from Montebello. She was taken from a bus stop near her school and stuffed into a laundry bag during the abduction. Now, this would end up being Richard Ramirez. He sexually abused this girl, but he did not murder her. He drops her off. And then just 2 weeks later, he takes a 9-year-old out of her bedroom in Monterey Park, rapes her, and then dumps her in a park near her home.
Sick dude.
So very sick.
He's sick. Yeah. 6-year-old, 9-year-old, really?
So he sexually assaults these two very young girls after he'd murdered a 79-year-old woman, but he's going to go back to murdering. You know, and we're going to be talking about a lot of victims of Richard Ramirez. He's going to kill a large number of women, but he's going to assault, rape, you know, many, many more than he actually kills. This guy would leave a lot of victims in his wake. So on March 17th, 1985, Richard Ramirez sees a very pretty girl by the name of Maria Hernandez. She's driving home to her new condo in Rosemead, California, and she lived with another woman named Dale Okazaki. And what happens is Maria gets out of her car, and as she's pushing the button to shut the garage door, a man confronts her with a .22 revolver. So basically, Richard Ramirez saw her, followed her, and as the garage door was going down, you know, snuck in underneath it before she had time to enter the condo. She starts screaming. She's pleading with him not to shoot her. The whole time he has the gun, you know, trained on her. And as the garage lights go out, she raises her hands to protect her face. Ramirez fires the gun and she falls to the ground. But miraculously, Gibbs, she had her keys in her hand as the shot was fired, and these keys deflected the bullet.
Wow. That was really lucky.
And kept her from being killed.
Good thing it was only a 22.
Yes. I'm sure that played a big part in it. So she pretended to be dead, though. And Ramirez takes the keys out of her hand and enters the condo. We mentioned that Maria had a roommate. And this roommate obviously hears the gunshot. She panics, tries to hide, but she doesn't stay hidden long enough. You know, only for a few minutes. And then, what, I don't know what you call it, Gibbs, curiosity, fear, whatever, causes her to leave her hiding place
right,
to see what had happened. Well, Richard Ramirez is still in the condo, and he ends up shooting this woman in the forehead. Now, as he leaves the condo, remember, Maria's playing dead. And Ramirez leaves, gets back into a stolen car, which he had followed Maria home in. And at that point, Maria does get up. She goes into the condo to try to save her roommate, but it's too late. You know, she's dead. The police come, confirm she's dead. But Maria is able to give police a good description of Richard Ramirez. So one thing to talk about is timing, because between the first and second murders, Ramirez waited almost a year. But his next murder is going to happen very quickly. You know, within the next day, he drives to Monterey Park. He sees another pretty woman by the name of Veronica Yu, and he starts following her. Now, Veronica notices at one point that she's being followed, which is amazing. Very good skills on her part, because you should be aware, right?
Absolutely.
But it's very tough it sometimes. Is tough. But she does. She realizes this guy is following her. She pulls over so she can let him by, and also so that she can see who it is. And he does pass her, but she does something that she probably shouldn't have done. She starts to follow Richard Ramirez.
She's trying to turn it around on him, but you don't do that.
Not with somebody like this guy.
Yeah, you just get safe, then you don't worry about it.
And what Ramirez does is he just stops the car in the middle of the road, gets out, walks back to her car, and Veronica asks him when he gets to her car why he was following her. And she tells him, you know, I'm going to call the police. And what Richard does is actually try to pull her straight through the car window, Gibbs.
Wow.
By her shoulders. Just grabs her and tries to
yank her out.
But it doesn't work. But when that doesn't work, when he's not able to pull her out, he shoots her in the car while she's in the car.
Right there and then.
But she doesn't die immediately. She's able to get out of the car. She's trying to find someone that can help her. And what Ramirez would tell police later is that, you know, he called her a bitch, laughed at her as he got into his car and took off. Now, what he didn't know was that as he was doing this, he was seen. There was two witnesses that saw him do this. They were sitting in a parked car just down the street, saw the whole thing. So once he's gone, they get out and try to help Veronica. The police are called. But by the time that the ambulance gets there, it's basically too late. You know, she dies in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. But again, now we have another eyewitness, two, in fact, this time, that are giving descriptions to the police. And my thought is, Gibbs, not that hard to give a description of Richard Ramirez.
I wouldn't think so.
He has a very distinctive look.
Kind of like you.
Exactly like me.
Exactly what you look like. Unless I have to sit across from a police sketch artist and I would...
Then there'd be no...
I just draw like some stick figure.
You're not the one drawing. The expert is drawing.
Oh.
You're just talking.
He'll just draw a stick figure.
Why would you think you would be drawing in that scenario?
Draw that circle a little bit bigger, Gibby. That's probably what you want.
How do you think the police work? They just hand you a
box of crayons,
and say, hey,
go at it.
Draw a very accurate depiction of the person that you saw. But even though they probably had pretty decent descriptions of Richard Ramirez, his murders are not linked at this point because they happened in different areas. We're talking about, you know, 84, 85 time frame. There wasn't great communication among the various police agencies in LA. And that was something that criminals used back then to help them get away with things.
Well, I think the big cities had that issue, right? You know, just one borough, like in New York, one borough wouldn't talk to the other one, wasn't their turf. They didn't worry about it. And
yeah, I would think you had it in Chicago and, like you said, New York,
yeah.
LA. No, any big city, you know, would have that problem. So the police officer that is assigned to this case would actually reach out to a guy by the name of Frank Salerno. And I think we mentioned Frank in a previous episode.
I think we did too.
Because he was the head of the task force formed to catch the Hillside Stranglers. So when we did the Bianchi and Buono episode, I think we talked about Frank. But we mentioned it, right? They have some information on the killer. And he was described as tall, thin, black hair, and very scary eyes. He was also dressed in black. Now, knowing what Richard Ramirez looks like, that's a very accurate description. Also could be the same for a lot of other people.
Right.
But Richard Ramirez has some very scary eyes. He's got a look about him that says, I'm moving to the other side of the street. You do whatever it is you got to do. I don't want to be involved in it at all.
He just looks evil, man.
He does.
Evil.
And he is evil, and he will say it.
We are all evil in some form or another. Are we not? Yes, I am evil. Not 100%, but I am evil.
So that was Richard in an interview saying, you know, yeah, I'm evil, but I'm not 100% evil, Gibbs. What's that mean?
I don't know what that means.
He's only 98% evil?
Either you're evil or you're not.
If anybody's 100% evil, it's Richard Ramirez.
Yeah.
This dude, when you look up evil in the dictionary, it just has a picture of Richard Ramirez. Now, Ramirez would kill again on March 26, 1985. And this would be in the wealthy community of Whittier, California. And for some reason, I want to say that's where Richard Nixon grew up, was born.
In Whittier?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I didn't follow Tricky Dick.
Yeah. And he would show up around 2 a.m. to the house of Vincent and Maxine Zazara. And through the window, he could see Vincent sleeping on the couch. Maxine was sleeping in the bedroom. As he's casing this house, all the windows are locked. But he's able to make his way into the house through the laundry room. And he walks right into the living room and shoots Vincent Zazara in the head.
Boom. That fast.
That quickly.
Yeah. Don't even give him a chance to respond. He's sleeping. Boom.
Now, it would come out that Vincent did try to get up, but it was instinctual attempt. He was pretty much dead.
Sure.
And he fell to the floor immediately and died. Richard walks to the bedroom. He ties Maxine up with a necktie, and then he sets out about the house looking for things to steal. And Maxine makes a decision. She is not going to wait around to be hurt, to be killed. She is going to try to take matters into her own hands. So what she does is she's able to roll off the bed and she grabs a shotgun that they kept underneath the bed. And when Richard comes back in the room, she's got this shotgun pointed at him. And so he reaches for his own gun, and Maxine pulls the trigger on this shotgun.
Good for her.
Good for her, but the worst sound that you can imagine happens.
Oh, no.
It's a click.
Yep.
Because apparently Vincent had taken the shells out of the shotgun because their grandkids had been visiting.
That's the worst, man, forgetting to put the shells back in. The whole purpose they have that there.
Well, pretty hard to defend yourself with a weapon that's not loaded.
Yeah.
But Maxine didn't know that. And she thought, hell, I'm going to kill this guy. He's killed my husband. Who knows what he's going to do to me? And I can't imagine hearing that click. Richard Ramirez shoots Maxine 3 times. He beat her severely, kicked her while she was on the ground. And then he goes into the kitchen and gets a very large knife, comes back into the bedroom, and in his own words, Gibbs, he was going to try to cut her heart out, but he could not get through the rib cage. But what he does end up doing is horrific in its own right. He cuts out her eyes.
Terrible, man.
And he puts them in a jewelry box. So if that's not 100% evil, I don't know what the hell is. That's not 96. That's not 97. That is 100% pure evil.
Yeah, to take the time to force the eyes to pop out and cut them, whatever his method was.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. But he would later say that he was going to rape Maxine Zazara, but he was unable to.
Couldn't perform, huh?
No. I was trying to figure out a way to say that. But I think that just pissed him off even more because he ends up stabbing her many times, you know, in the stomach, in the throat, in her pubic area.
Right.
So after he's done that, he takes all the stuff that he had gathered that he wanted to steal and he leaves out the front door. So eventually the police are going to stumble across the scene. They would find 2 footprints. And the footprints are going to match another case that they have on file. And it's the case of a woman in Los Angeles who had been the victim of an attempted kidnapping. So they had taken footprints in that case as well. And the police officer who's investigating these two cases, he believes that the murder of Vincent and Maxine is connected not only to this abduction in LA, but also to the 1984 murders. Now, we know it is. We know it's Richard Ramirez. But this police officer is putting it together back in the day, but nobody believes him. Right? They're saying, hey, that's a hunch. You don't know that. But he was right. But he couldn't get anybody to believe him at the time. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations, And studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The very next month, so we're still in 1985, it's April, Ramirez would find the home of William and Lillian Doy. Lillian was confined to a wheelchair.
Okay.
She had suffered from a very severe stroke a few years earlier. Richard Ramirez enters the house in the back through a window. He cuts the screen. He goes into where William is. William tries to grab a gun, but Richard Ramirez has the element of surprise, and he already has his gun out. He shoots William in the face, just above his upper lip, below his nose, and then he proceeds to beat him until he passes out. Now, Lillian wakes up from the gunshot. He proceeds to tie her hands. And then again, he sets out about the house looking for things to steal. At some point, William wakes up. He's still alive. He had been beaten unconscious. He wakes up and Richard sees him, beats him again severely, knocks him out. And what Richard Ramirez would say was that he was so hyped up that he goes back into Lillian's room and he rapes her. I mean, this is a woman, Gibbs, confined to a wheelchair.
Right. Just another low for him.
You just can't hardly fathom the level of depravity that Richard Ramirez displays. It's off the charts.
Yeah, he's just doesn't care at all, man. He has no morals. Zero.
No, he doesn't care about anything.
6-year-old, 9-year-old, wheelchair-bound.
80-year-old women.
It doesn't matter. He doesn't care.
After Richard Ramirez had left the house, William Doy woke up. You got to imagine this guy. He's been shot in the face. He was beaten several times. He finds the strength to get to the phone and call police. But he would die at 5 a.m. the next morning. That's how bad his injuries were. But he was able to find the strength to get to the phone and call the police. And when the police do their investigation, they again find footprints and they're able to narrow it down to one specific shoe brand, Avia. And they're able to make a plaster cast out of these footprints. So we jump forward to May 29th, but we're not jumping very far. I mean, he is on a path of averaging, you know, an attack or a murder a month. It's May 29th. Ramirez is in the town of Monrovia, California, and he chooses his next house. And it happens to be the house of an 81-year-old named Mabel Bell. She lived with her sister, Nettie Lang. And Nettie Lang was an invalid. She had, you know, some severe medical conditions, but this was a nice area. The sisters, they didn't worry about crime.
Place you could sleep with your windows open, maybe?
They didn't even lock their doors.
They didn't lock your doors. The good old days.
The good old days. Well, it really wasn't the good old days.
Not this time.
You should have locked your doors anyway, right. But it was the good old days of where people felt like they could. And for the most part, in a lot of places, you really could get away with that. But they weren't counting on Richard Ramirez targeting them for no reason. So he enters through the front door, and using a hammer, he would pound the head of Nettie Lang over and over.
Yeah, just another sickening level he goes to. Just, man, it's so violent.
And then he did the same thing with Mabel. So these are two older women, they're sisters, they're living together. I mean, it's hard to even explain what this scene would have been like. The amount of blood. It was said there was brains at this scene.
Brain matter everywhere?
Brain matter. That's how vicious these attacks were.
Hitting so hard, he breaks through the skull, and he got brain matter flying in the air.
Yes.
Wow.
Hard to imagine. But then he takes an electrical cord from a clock that was sitting on like a bedside table. He exposes the wires, you know, rips the two parts in half.
Sure, gets the bare wire.
Yep, down to the bare wire, and he uses this to shock Mabel, you know, sending electric current through her body. He would end up drawing a pentagram in red lipstick on her thigh. He drew one on the wall, and then he went back to the bedroom of Nettie Lang, and he raped her. And then Gibbs, after doing these horrible things to these two women, Richard Ramirez goes to the kitchen,
right,
grabs a soda, he grabs a banana, and he leaves.
Okay, interesting.
It is, I mean, from the standpoint of his mindset.
Right.
Those are horrible acts.
Yeah.
You're not shaken.
Yeah.
You're not in the least bit remorseful.
Let me get a soda, something to snack on. Start walking home.
Then I'll take off.
Yeah, yeah. This is more like second nature to him. Oh. This is what I do.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's like you and I going down to the grocery, getting a pint of ice cream, coming home. You don't give it a second thought. It doesn't mean much.
What makes you think I get a pint of ice cream? Why couldn't you say it's like you going in and getting some spinach and kale and coming back and making a little salad?
That wouldn't be like you. It's just there's no emotion. There's nothing.
Yeah. Lifeless.
I picture like, you know, blank eyes.
Yeah.
There's just, you're right.
Yeah. Just lifeless. Nothing in his soul but the evil.
But he's not done. He's heading to another house. So he drives to Burbank, picks out another house. It's locked up, but he ends up making entry through the dog door.
He's skinny enough, he probably can.
Well, I think he got in at least far enough that he was able to unlock the door.
He probably learned that from his cousin.
I think those dog doors can be a little dangerous.
I think so too. I don't have one.
I don't either. Once inside, Ramirez finds a sleeping woman. He shines a flashlight in her eyes. And he would say to her, "Wake up, don't scream, or I will kill you." And it's at this point that the woman tells him that she has an 11-year-old son who's sleeping in the next room. So Richard Ramirez gets her up, makes her go into the son's room. He jumps onto the bed, onto her son, puts a gun to this boy's head. And at this point, this woman would do anything to save her son. To the point, Gibbs, that she throws herself in front of the gun in between her son and Richard Ramirez. That's what a mother will do. No thought for herself, nothing.
You're exactly right.
She was willing to give her life for her son at that point.
I'd throw you in front of me if needed to.
And vice versa. But she's begging him not to hurt her son. You know, she's telling Richard that he can take whatever he wants. She'll give him all the jewelry she has. So eventually he puts handcuffs on her son and puts him in a closet. And alone with this woman, he forces her to perform sexual acts on him. He sodomizes her several times. And this woman is going to live. And it's the reason why we're not saying her name. So she's able to tell the police her story. And she tells them that, you know, this man had what she described as demonic eyes. So again, with the eyes.
Right.
And she's not lying. I mean, when you see pictures or video, you know,
he's freaky.
He has some freaky eyes.
I'm always amazed by the amount of women that like him.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that yet, but there were a lot of women
fascinated
by him, thought he was good looking.
Yeah,
which I'm not seeing at all. I'm not saying I'm Brad Pitt, but
well, I'm definitely saying you're not Brad Pitt.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Yeah, just get that out there and make sure everybody's clear on that.
But again, is it just the bad boy image, the I don't give a shit attitude. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't either.
Was it the no teeth?
Help us out. Tell us what it is, ladies.
But after he victimizes this woman, again, he goes to the kitchen, grabs a soda. You know, we talked about this. This guy did nothing but... Now, he got a banana, which I thought was strange, because there's a lot of out there about him eating nothing but candy and drinking sugary sodas.
Maybe he just felt his potassium was low and wanted to kick it up.
Maybe. I don't know. But Richard would tell this woman that she was lucky that he let her live because he had killed a lot of people. You know, she's relaying this information to police. And then in a strange move, strange, I guess, for Richard Ramirez, he gives her a nightgown, tells her to cover up, and then he cuffs her and her son to the bed. He leaves the keys to the handcuffs on the mantle so that when somebody else comes home, she has another daughter that's not there. And it's going to be, you know, when her daughter comes home.
Thank goodness the daughter wasn't there.
Yeah, thank goodness she wasn't there. But right before he leaves, he tells her that if she tells anyone about this incident, he will come back and kill her. Now, one of the things that she did tell police, right? Because she gave a description, but she also said that outside of the eyes, she didn't really get a great look at him. She was purposefully trying not to look at him. So because of this, the description is not great. The composite is not the same as some of the others. And this attack is not linked with any of the others at first. Now, Gibbs, I got to go back and talk about the two sisters because they are found a few days after the attack by a handyman, both still alive, but barely. And it's amazing that they were alive two days after this vicious attack.
After what he did, I am so surprised.
They had multiple skull fractures. Like we said, their brain tissue was exposed. They were both in comas. The police department in that town, they were so shocked by the attack that they had to call in the sheriff's department. You know, I'm assuming this was not a big police department in this small town.
Right.
So they called in the sheriff's department.
Needed better resources.
They did. They wanted to get the best resources that they could to solve this case. And it's a miracle, Gibbs, and I don't know how it happened, but Nettie Lang, one of the sisters, and she was the one that was an invalid, she survived this attack, but her sister Mabel did not. She died. I can't believe either one of them lived.
That's amazing right there.
It really is.
A miracle.
So as police are investigating this crime scene, they actually find quite a bit of evidence. They find two bananas, half eaten. There's urine in the toilet. And they find two empty soda cans. Now, all of that in and of itself doesn't really mean anything, right? That could have come from anybody. But the one thing that they do find that would connect is an Avia footprint in blood. Especially with all these Avia footprints, they're starting to put it together. Right. And starting to think that they have a serial killer on the loose. And like we said, this is a person that is not discriminating or not doesn't have what you would really call a type when it comes to victims. So no one's going to be safe. Right. This is not the situation where, you know, a serial killer is only murdering people or women with long brown hair. Or long blonde hair.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, if it wasn't for the footprints, there'd be no way to tie all these together.
No, correct. But once they do, I think it's scary to think about the fact that this guy...
Can't really warn any...
No.
Any certain...
You know, everybody in all... And he's kind of geographically going from area to area.
Right.
So
it doesn't matter what side of town you live on. Doesn't matter if you're... A little kid or a older lady.
It doesn't matter your age. Yeah. It doesn't matter, you know, rich, poor. It doesn't seem to matter.
Life support, he might come get you.
Lock your doors. Lock your windows. If you have the ability to provide additional security devices, then by all means do so.
Who wants to be next? I don't. No one else does.
So just a quick snippet from the police back in the day, you know, warning people, lock your doors, first of all. And you hear him say it. If you've got a way to defend yourself, this is the time to pull it out. Yeah. Be ready.
Don't mess around with this dude.
But that doesn't stop Richard Ramirez. Because the very next month, and like I said, it is month after month with this guy in 1985, because we're in June. He finds a house in the town of Pico Rivera, and it's about midnight. He is attempting to get into this house through a window. He finds out that they're all locked up, with the exception of one. And this is a window in the living room, but he has a hard time getting it open because it's essentially painted shut. And maybe that's the reason why they didn't lock it. They couldn't get it open anyway. The paint had dried and it was hard to open.
Right.
But eventually he is able to open the window. And as he does, he can hear a woman call out to her husband asking him if he was opening a window. And this house happened to belong to an LA sheriff deputy by the name of John Rodriguez. And he hears his wife. He goes to see what she's talking about. But this spooks Richard Ramirez off. But they do find another Avia shoe print, you know, underneath the window that he opened. So that was a bust for Richard. But he targets some other houses that night. He's not able to get into these houses. He's frustrated. He actually tries to kidnap another girl, but his kidnap gets thwarted. Someone calls the police and he runs off. And then he's stopped at a red light by LAPD. And it's a motorcycle cop. Like
Chips?
Like Chips. Like except they were a highway patrol. But
Eric Estrada?
Eric Estrada. I once drank a beer with Eric Estrada.
Did you?
In the Bahamas.
He married like a girl up next to my town.
It's a small world.
She was a Playboy bunny.
Well, of course she was.
Centerfold, whatever, for a couple of years.
But Richard Ramirez had no license, no registration, and he's driving a stolen car. So you got to think, Gibbs, at this point, his luck has run out.
Yeah.
How in the world would he get out of this?
Right.
Not to mention the fact that it had gone out on the radio that a man had tried to kidnap a girl. They knew what car he was driving. That went out on the radio. But this motorcycle police officer doesn't put it all together. Somehow, he walks up to the car, and you have to imagine how different things would have gone. Because Richard Ramirez is going to murder a lot more people after this incident. What if this police officer had put it together? You know, now, Richard would say later that the cop was joking around with him saying, hey, you're not really that killer, are you? Now, you know, if that's accurate, who knows? That story came out and Richard said, no, you know, that's not me. But you guys aren't going to catch that guy anyway. And while the police officer is back at his motorcycle, Richard Ramirez draws a pentagram on the car. He opens up the door and he bolts. He makes a run for it. And he actually gets away. I mean, this police officer is not able to catch him, find him. So eventually, the police officer makes his way back to the car. He figures out that it's stolen. He finds a wallet with $100 in it. He finds an appointment card for the dentist, which I find very odd.
Really strange.
Given Richard Ramirez's lack of personal hygiene and apparent care for his teeth throughout his life. So they had him, Gibbs. They had Richard Ramirez. They had the Night Stalker. And he got away.
I think I've heard a story like this before. When the cops got him, but they let him get away.
You've heard it or you've lived it?
I won't tell everything, man.
You won't tell everybody how you got away?
I'm sitting here this time.
But the problem is, you know, like we said, we know Richard Ramirez is going to kill more people and hurt more people, right? It's not just the number of people that he murdered. I mean, he sexually assaulted a large number of women that weren't killed. You know, in all, we're talking close to 30 victims of Richard Ramirez, probably at least 13 murders. So we have a lot more to cover. But police are on to him. They don't know who he is yet, but they're getting closer. And as we're going to find out in part two, you know, it's just a matter of time, right? The time is ticking down for Richard Ramirez and his freedom. But that's part two. And that's next week.
So like you said, they're clued in now. They know what they're looking for. And the public's more aware. And it's just a matter of time.
Well, it is. And the public is going to play a big part, and which we'll see in part two.
Yeah.
They play a huge part in this case. So in the apprehension of Richard Ramirez.
Right. Which is good. But first we have to go through getting to that part, which is, you just said, it's going to be next week. You're going to make everybody wait.
Got to make them wait a week.
Man, they're not going to like that.
And we got a lot. Unfortunately, we have a lot more murders to go through before we get to that part where the public, you know, gets involved in his apprehension. So that's it for part one of Richard Ramirez. Gibbs, we got some voicemails. You want to do those?
Absolutely.
Hey, guys. How are you? My name's Chris, and I'm calling in from the lovely city of Boston, Massachusetts. Just wanted to call in and tell you guys I really appreciate what you do. Take a minute out of my day and let you know. Really look forward to Monday every week on my ride into Boston in the traffic that I'm so lucky to sit in. You guys bring a little light to my day by talking about all the stuff that you do. It's kind of dark, obviously, but you know, it's interesting. And you guys cover it with, you're very thorough, and you cover it with, you know, a good sense of levity. And I just really appreciate what you do. You got a good chemistry together. I know myself and a lot of the other listeners just really enjoy your podcast. So keep up the hard work. And like you guys say, keep your time ticking. All right. Have a good one, guys. Bye.
All right. Awesome voicemail. We really appreciate those kind of great comments.
I felt like I was on Goodwill Hunting.
No, I was expecting a much stronger accent because I was going to say, how you like them apples?
How you like those apples?
Those are horrible Boston accents, by the way.
Very bad.
From both of us.
And my mom grew up in South Boston. So
did she? She's a Southie?
She's a Southie.
How about that?
I know. Drink some tonic.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. This is Dawn. I love your show. I really, really want to be Team Gibby, but he laughs like my ex-boyfriend, and I cannot handle it. So I can't make a decision right now on that. But I love it. I wait for it. I listen to both your podcasts, and I'm going to keep my own time ticking. You guys keep your own time ticking, and we'll talk about the laugh later. All right. Bye.
Gibby, how many times have I told you not to laugh like Dawn's boyfriend, ex-boyfriend?
I know it. Dawn, you're breaking my heart.
We keep talking about it, but you keep doing it, man.
Dawn, I'll work on it. Come to the light. Cross over to Team Gibby.
Hey, y'all. It's Amy from Virginia. And I was just listening to the Lockhart episode. I think it's episode 60. You talked about how you just started watching Justified and how awesome that show is. And I just did like a little happy dance in the car because I love Justified. And I just felt like, I don't know, I felt like somebody needed to know that Justified is awesome. So I'm so glad that you're into it. I also wanted to say that I love, love, love your podcast. It gets me through my hour-long commute, and you guys do a great job. So stay safe. Keep your own time ticking. Bye.
I knew she was in the Justified when she said, hi, y'all.
Hi, y'all.
Right there, I knew.
Well, I finished Justified, loved it. Now I'm getting my wife to watch it, so I'm watching it again.
Repeat.
But I'm on to Sons of Anarchy.
I know you are because you thinking I'm having a kind of thinking you might be getting yourself a little bike to ride.
I did go look at Harleys the other day.
That's what I'm saying. You're really getting into it, man. First, you watch Justified, you go out and buy a cowboy hat.
I am going to buy a cowboy hat to wear down to Nashville.
You already bought the boots.
I have had the boots.
Yeah. You made me go get the chaps.
Hey, nobody made you get those, dude. You've had those for years.
I just dusted them off.
Oh, all right. Love the voicemails. We appreciate it. And we appreciate everyone. everyone that takes time to listen.
Yeah.
Download.
Even that guy next to you that's not listening right now, I appreciate him because you're going to say, look at my smartphone. Look what I'm listening to. Turn yours on to it too, buddy.
I like that. That helps us out. All right. So that's it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.